Side 8. Unfinished Tales of Numenor and Middle-earth by J.R.R. Tolkien. Continuing with Aldarion and Arrendis on page 211. It was, however, to Holokar that Oncolomel was wedded in the end. From one version it appears that the persistence of Holokar in his suit, despite her rejection of him, and the urging of the council that she choose a husband for the quiet of the realm, led to their marriage, not many years after their first meeting among the flocks in Emeria. But elsewhere it is said that she remained unmarried so long that her cousin Saranto, relying on the provision of the new law, called upon her to surrender the heirship, and that she then married Holokar in order to spite Saranto. In yet another brief notice, it is implied that she wedded Holokar after Aldarion had rescinded the provision in order to put an end to Saranto's hopes of becoming king if Oncolomel died childless. However this may be, the story is clear that Oncolomel did not desire love, nor did she wish for a son. And she said, "Must I become like Queen Almarion and dote upon him?" Her life with Holokar was unhappy, and she begrudged him her son Anarion, and there was strife between them thereafter. She sought to subject him, claiming to be the owner of his land, and forbidding him to dwell upon it, for she would not, as she said, have her husband, a farm steward. From this time comes the last tale that is recorded of those unhappy things. For Oncolomel would let none of her women wed, and although for fear of her most were restrained, they came from the country about, and had lovers whom they wished to marry. But Holokar, in secret, arranged for them to be wedded, and he declared that he would give a last feast at his own house before he left it. To this feast he invited Oncolomel, saying that it was the house of his kindred, and should be given a farewell of courtesy. Oncolomel came, attended by all her women, for she did not care to be waited on by men. She found the house all lit and arrayed as for a great feast, and men of the household attired in garlands as for their weddings, and each with another garland in his hands for a bride. "Come," said Holokar, "the weddings are prepared, and the bride chambers ready. But since it cannot be thought that we should ask the Lady Oncolomel, king's heir, to lie with a farm steward, then alas, she must sleep alone tonight." And Oncolomel perforce remained there, for it was too far to ride back, nor would she go unattended. Neither men nor women hid their smiles, and Oncolomel would not come to the feast, but lay abed, listening to the laughter far off, and thinking it aimed at herself. Next day she rode off in a cold rage, and Holokar sent 3 men to escort her. Thus he was revenged, for she came never back to Emeria, where the very sheep seemed to make scorn of her. But she pursued Holokar with hatred afterwards. Of the later years of Tar Aldarion, nothing can now be said, save that he seems to have continued his voyages to Middle-earth, and more than once left Oncolomel as his regent. His last voyage took place about the end of the first millennium of the Second Age, and in the year 1075, Oncolomel became the first ruling queen of Numenor. It is told that after the death of Tar Aldarion in 1098, Tar Oncolomel neglected all her father's policies and gave no further aid to Gil-galad in Lindon. Her son, Anarion, who was afterwards the 8th ruler of Numenor, first had 2 daughters. They disliked and feared the queen and refused the heirship, remaining unwed, since the queen would not in revenge allow them to marry. Note 28. This is strange because Anarion was the heir in Oncolomel's lifetime. In the line of Elros, page 220, it is said only that Anarion's daughters refused the scepter. End of note. Anarion's son, Sirion, was born the last and was the 9th ruler of Numenor. Of Arrendis, it is said that when old age came upon her, neglected by Oncolomel and in bitter loneliness, she longed once more for Aldarion, and learning that he was gone from Numenor on what proved to be his last voyage, but that he was soon expected to return, she left Emeria at last and journeyed unrecognized and unknown to the haven of Romena. There, it seems, she met her fate, but only the words Arrendis perished in water in the year 985 remain to suggest how it came to pass. Reader's note: the earlier generations of the line of Elros. Elros Tarminiater, died 442, was the father of sons Vardimir Nolimon, 61 to 471, Manwendil, and Atanalkar, and daughter Tindomiel. Vardimir Nolimon was the father of sons Tar-Amandil, 192 to 603, Aulandil, born 213, and Nolandil, born 222, and daughter Vardilme, born 203. Manwendil and Atanalkar had unnamed descendants existing at the time of the change of the law. Tar-Amandil was the father of sons Tar-Elendil, 350 to 751, and Earendir, born 361, and daughter Myron, born 377. Nolandil was the father of sons Aramendil, born 382, and Axandr, born 395, and daughter Yavian, born 371. Alendil had unnamed descendants existing at the time of the change of the law. Tar-Elendil had one son, Tar-Meneldir, 543 to 942, and two daughters, Silmarion, born 521, and Isilme, born 532. The son of Earendir was Kaliondo, 512 to 900, whose son Malantir was born in 670. Malantir had unnamed descendants existing at the time of the change of the law. Axantir's sons were Ardamir, born 562, and Kemender, born 575. Axantir's daughter, Lindissa, was born in 551. Tar-Meneldir married Omarion, and they had two daughters, Ilanel, born 712, and Almiel, born 729. The son of Tar-Meneldir and Almarion was Tar-Aldarion, 700 to 1098. Silmarion married Elatan of Andunia, and their son Valandil, lord of Andunia, was born in 630. Kemender had one son, Halatan of Hiarastorni, born 711, and one daughter, Irilde, born 700. Ardamir had unnamed descendants existing at the time of the change of the law. Ilanel married Orchaldor, and their son, Soranto, was born in 799. Tar-Aldarion married Arendis, and they had a daughter named Tar-Ancalame, 873 to 1285. Halatan of Hiarastorni had one daughter, Nesanie, born 840, and a son, Halakar, 852 to 1211, who married Tar-Ancalame. Tar-Anarion, the son of Tar-Ancalame and Halakar, lived from 1003 to 1404. End of note. Notes. Chronology. Anardil, Aldarion, was born in the year 700 of the Second Age, and his first voyage to Middle-earth took place in 725 to 727. Meneldir, his father, became king of Numenor in 740. The Guild of Venturers was founded in 750, and Aldarion was proclaimed king's heir in 800. Arendis was born in 771. Aldarion's seven-year voyage, page 178, covered the years 806 to 813. The first voyage of the Palaran, page 179, 816 to 820. The voyage of seven ships in defiance of Tar-Meneldir, page 180, 824 to 829. And the voyage of 14 years that followed immediately on the last, pages 180 and 181, 829 to 843. Aldarion and Arendis were betrothed in 858. The years of the voyage undertaken by Aldarion after his betrothal, page 187, were 863 to 869, and the wedding was in 870. Ancalame was born in the spring of 873. The Hirilande sailed in the spring of 877, and Aldarion's return, followed by the breach with Arendis, took place in 882. He received the scepter of Numenor in 883. 3. The Line of Elros, Kings of Numenor, from the founding of the city of Armenelos to the downfall. The realm of Numenor is held to have begun in the 32nd year of the Second Age, when Elros, son of Earendil, ascended the throne in the city of Armenelos, being then 90 years of age. Thereafter, he was known in the Scroll of the Kings by the name of Tar-Minyatur, for it was the custom of the kings to take their titles in the forms of the Quenya, or high elven tongue, that being the noblest tongue of the world. And this custom endured until the days of Ar-Adunahor, Tar-Heru-Numen. Elros Tar-Minyatur ruled the Numenoreans for 410 years, for to the Numenoreans long life had been granted, and they remained unwearied for thrice the span of mortal men in Middle-earth. But to Earendil's son the longest life of any man was given, and to his descendants a lesser span, and yet one greater than to others even of the Numenoreans. And so it was until the coming of the Shadow, when the years of the Numenoreans began to wane. Note 1. There are several references to the greater lifespan of the descendants of Elros than that of any others among the Numenoreans, in addition to those in the tale of Aldarion and Arrendis. Thus, in the Akalabeth, the Silmarillion, page 261, it is said that all the line of Elros had long life, even according to the measure of the Numenoreans. And in an isolated note, the difference in longevity is given a precise range. The end of vigor for the descendants of Elros came, before the waning of their lifespan set in, about the 400th year, or somewhat earlier, whereas for those not of that line, it came towards the 200th year, or somewhat later. It may be noted that almost all the kings from Vardimir to Tar-Ankalimon lived to, or a little beyond, their 400th year, and the three who did not died within 1 or 2 years of it. But in the latest writing on this subject, which derives, however, from about the same time as the latest work on the tale of Aldarion and Arrendis, the distinction in longevity is greatly diminished. To the Numenorean people as a whole is ascribed a lifespan some 5 times the length of that of other men, although this is in contradiction to the statement in the Lord of the Rings Appendix A, 1-1, that the Numenoreans were granted a span in the beginning thrice that of lesser men, a statement made again in the preface to the present text. And the difference of the line of Elros from others in this respect is less a distinct mark and attribute than a mere tendency to live to a greater age. Though the case of Arrendis and the somewhat shorter lives of the Beorians of the West are mentioned, there is no suggestion here, as there is in the tale of Aldarion and Arrendis, that the difference in their expectation of life was both very great and also something inherent in their destinies, and recognized to be so. In this account, only Elros was granted a peculiar longevity, and it is said here that he and his brother Elrond were not differently endowed in the physical potential of life, but that since Elros elected to remain among the kindred of men, he retained the chief characteristic of men as opposed to the Quendi. The seeking elsewhither, as the Eldar called it, the weariness or desire to depart from the world. It is further expounded that the increase in the Numenorean span was brought about by assimilation of their mode of life to that of the Eldar, though they were expressly warned that they had not become Eldar, but remained mortal men, and had been granted only an extension of the period of their vigor of mind and body. Thus, as the Eldar, they grew at much the same rate as other men, but when they had achieved full growth, they then aged, or wore out, very much more slowly. The first approach of world weariness was indeed for them a sign that their period of vigor was nearing its end. When it came to an end, if they persisted in living, then decay would proceed, as growth had done, no more slowly than among other men. Thus a Numenorean would pass quickly, in 10 years maybe, from health and vigor of mind to decrepitude and senility. In the earlier generations they did not cling to life, but resigned it voluntarily. Clinging to life, and so in the end dying perforce and involuntarily, was one of the changes brought about by the Shadow and the rebellion of the Numenoreans. It was also accompanied by a shrinking of their natural lifespan. End of note. 1. Elros Tar-Minyatur. He was born 58 years before the Second Age began. He remained unwearied until he was 500 years old, and then laid down his life in the year 442, having ruled for 410 years. 2. Vardimir Nolimon. He was born in the year 61 of the Second Age, and died in 471. He was called Nolimon, for his chief love was for ancient lore, which he gathered from elves and men. Upon the departure of Elros, being then 381 years of age, he did not ascend the throne, but gave the scepter to his son. He is nonetheless accounted the second of the kings, and is deemed to have reigned 1 year. Note 2. See page 217, note 26. End of note. It remained the custom thereafter until the days of Tar Atanamir that the king should yield the scepter to his successor before he died, and the kings died of free will while yet in vigor of mind. 3. Tar Amandil. He was the son of Vardamir Nolimon, and he was born in the year 192. He ruled for 148 years and surrendered the scepter in 590. He died in 603. Note 3. The figure of 148, rather than 147, must represent the years of Tar Amandil's actual rule, and not take the notional year of Vardamir's reign into account. End of note. 4. Tar Elendil. He was the son of Tar Amandil, and he was born in the year 350. He ruled for 150 years, and surrendered the scepter in 740. He died in 751. He was also called Parmaite, for with his own hand he made many books and legends of the lore gathered by his grandfather. He married late in his life, and his eldest child was a daughter, Silmarion, born in the year 521, whose son was Valandil. Note 4. There is no question but that Silmarion was the eldest child of Tar Elendil, and her birth date is several times given as second age 521, while that of her brother, Tarmineldar, is fixed at 543. In the Tale of Years, Appendix B to the Lord of the Rings, however, Silmarion's birth is given in the annal entry 548, a date that goes back to the first drafts of that text. I think it very likely that this should have been revised, but escaped notice. End of note. Of Valandil came the lords of Andúnië, of whom the last was Amandil, father of Elendil the Tall, who came to Middle-earth after the downfall. In Tar Elendil's reign, the ships of the Númenóreans first came back to Middle-earth. 5. Tar Mineldir. He was the only son and third child of Tar Elendil, and he was born in the year 543. He ruled for 143 years and surrendered the scepter in 883. He died in 942. His right name was Iramon. He took his title Mineldir from his love of Star-lore. He married Almarion, daughter of Veontar, captain of ships under Tar Elendil. He was wise, but gentle and patient. He resigned to his son, suddenly and long before due time, as a stroke of policy, in troubles that arose, owing to the disquiet of Gil-galad in Lindon, when he first became aware that an evil spirit, hostile to Eldar and Dúnedain, was stirring in Middle-earth. 6. Tar Aldarion. He was the eldest child and only son of Tar Mineldir, and he was born in the year 700. He ruled for 192 years and surrendered the scepter to his daughter in 1075. He died in 1098. His right name was Anardil, but he was early known by the name of Aldarion because he was much concerned with trees and planted great woods to furnish timber for the shipyards. He was a great mariner and shipbuilder, and himself sailed often to Middle-earth, where he became the friend and counselor of Gil-galad. Owing to his long absences abroad, his wife Arrendis became angered, and they separated in the year 882. His only child was a daughter, very beautiful, Ancalime. In her favor, Aldarion altered the law of succession so that the eldest daughter of a king should succeed, if he had no sons. This change displeased the descendants of Elros, and especially the heir under the old law, Soranto, Aldarion's nephew, son of his elder sister, Ilanel. Note 5. This is not in agreement with the account of the earlier and later laws of succession given on pages 208 and 209, according to which Soranto only became Ancalime's heir, if she died childless, by virtue of the new law, for he was a descendant in the female line. His elder sister undoubtedly means the elder of his two sisters. End of note. 7. Tar Unkalime. She was the only child of Tar Aldarion and the first ruling queen of Numenor. She was born in the year 873, and she reigned for 205 years, longer than any ruler after Elros. She surrendered the scepter in 1280 and died in 1285. She long remained unwed, but when pressed by Saranto to resign, in his despite, she married in the year 1000 Halakar, son of Halatan, a descendant of Vardamir. Note 6. See page 211. End of note. After the birth of her son Anarion, there was strife between Unkalime and Halakar. She was proud and willful. After Aldarion's death, she neglected all his policies and gave no further aid to Gil-galad. 8. Tar Anarion. He was the son of Tar Unkalime, and he was born in the year 1003. He ruled for 114 years and surrendered the scepter in 1394. He died in 1404. 9. Tar Surion. He was the third child of Tar Anarion. His sisters refused the scepter. Note 7. See page 212 and note 28 on page 217. End of note. He was born in the year 1174 and ruled for 162 years. He surrendered the scepter in 1556 and died in 1574. 10. Tar Telperion. She was the second ruling queen of Numenor. She was long-lived, for the women of the Numenorians had the longer life or laid down their lives less easily, and she would wed with no man. Therefore, after her day, the scepter passed to Menaster. He was the son of Isilmo, the second child of Tar Surion. Note 8. It is curious that the scepter passed to Tar Telperion when Tar Surion had a son, Isilmo. It may well be that the succession here depends on the formulation of the new law given in The Lord of the Rings. That is, simple primogeniture irrespective of sex, see page 208, rather than inheritance by a daughter only if the ruler had no son. End of note. Tar Telperion was born in the year 1320. She ruled for 175 years until 1731 and died in that same year. Note 9. The date 1731 here given for the end of the rule of Tar Telperion and the accession of Tar Menaster is strangely at variance with the dating, fixed by many references, of the first war against Sauron. For the great Numenorean fleet sent by Tar Menaster reached Middle-earth in the year 1700. I cannot in any way account for the discrepancy. End of note. 11. Tar Menaster. This name he had because he built a high tower upon the hill of Orimet, nigh to Andunia and the west shores, and thence would spend great part of his days gazing westward. For the yearning was grown strong in the hearts of the Numenorians. He loved the Eldar, but envied them. He it was who sent a great fleet to the aid of Gil-galad in the first war against Sauron. He was born in the year 1474 and ruled for 138 years. He surrendered the scepter in 1869 and died in 1873. 12. Tar Kiryatan. He was born in the year 1634 and ruled for 160 years. He surrendered the scepter in 2029 and died in 2035. He was a mighty king, but greedy of wealth. He built a great fleet of royal ships, and his servants brought back great store of metals and gems and oppressed the men of Middle-earth. He scorned the yearnings of his father and eased the restlessness of his heart by voyaging east and north and south until he took the scepter. It is said that he constrained his father to yield to him ere of his free will he would. In this way, it is held, might the first coming of the shadow upon the bliss of Numenor be seen. 13. Tar Atanamir the Great. He was born in the year 1800 and ruled for 192 years until 2221, which was the year of his death. Much is said of this king in the annals, such as now survive the downfall, for he was like his father, proud and greedy of wealth, and the Numenoreans in his service exacted heavy tribute from the men of the coasts of Middle-earth. In his time the shadow fell upon Numenor, and the king and those that followed his lore spoke openly against the ban of the Valar, and their hearts were turned against the Valar and the Eldar. But wisdom they still kept, and they feared the lords of the West, and did not defy them. Atanamir is called also the Unwilling, for he was the first of the kings to refuse to lay down his life or to renounce the scepter. He lived until death took him, perforce, in dotage. Note 10. In the Tale of Years, Appendix B to The Lord of the Rings, occurs the entry 2251. Tar Atanamir takes the scepter. Rebellion and division of the Numenoreans begins. This is altogether discrepant with the present text, according to which Tar Atanamir died in 2221. This date, 2221, is, however, itself an emendation from 2251, and his death is given elsewhere as 2251. Thus the same year appears in different texts as both the date of his accession and the date of his death, and the whole structure of the chronology shows clearly that the former must be wrong. Moreover, in the Akalabeth, The Silmarillion, page 266, it is said that it was in the time of Atanamir's son, Ancalimon, that the people of Numenor became divided. I have little doubt, therefore, that the entry in the Tale of Years is an error for a correct reading. 2251. Death of Tar Atanamir. Tar Ancalimon takes the scepter. Rebellion and division of the Numenoreans begins. But, if so, it remains strange that the date of Atanamir's death should have been altered in the line of Elros if it were fixed by an entry in the Tale of Years. End of note. 14. Tar Ancalimon. He was born in the year 1986 and ruled for 165 years until his death in 2386. In his time, the rift became wider between the king's men, the larger part, and those who maintained their ancient friendship with the Eldar. Many of the king's men began to forsake the use of the elven tongues and to teach them no longer to their children. But the royal titles were still given in Quenya, out of ancient custom rather than love, for fear lest the breaking of the old usage should bring ill fortune. 15. Tar Telemaite. He was born in the year 2136 and ruled for 140 years until his death in 2526. Hereafter, the kings ruled in name from the death of their father to their own death, though the actual power passed often to their sons or counselors, and the days of the descendants of Elros waned under the shadow. This king was so called because of his love of silver, and he bade his servants to seek ever for Mithril. 16. Tar Vanimelde. She was the third ruling queen. She was born in the year 2277 and ruled for 111 years until her death in 2637. She gave little heed to ruling, loving rather music and dance, and the power was wielded by her husband, Herukalmo, younger than she, but a descendant of the same degree from Tar Atanamir. Herukalmo took the scepter upon his wife's death, calling himself Tar Andukal, and withholding the rule from his son, Alcarin. Yet some do not reckon him in the line of kings as 17th, and pass to Alcarin. Tar Andukal was born in the year 2286, and he died in 2657. 17. Tar Alcarin. He was born in the year 2406, and he ruled for 80 years until his death in 2737, being rightful king for 100 years. 18. Tar Kalmakil. He was born in the year 2516, and he ruled for 88 years until his death in 2825. This name he took, for in his youth he was a great captain and won wide lands along the coasts of Middle-earth. Thus he kindled the hate of Sauron, who nonetheless withdrew, and built his power in the east, far from the shores, biding his time. In the days of Tar Kalmakil, the name of the king was first spoken in Adunaik, and by the king's men he was called Ar-Belzagar. 19. Tar Ardamin. He was born in the year 2618, and he ruled for 74 years until his death in 2899. His name in Adunaik was Ar-Abatarik. Note 11. In the list of the kings and queens of Numenor in Appendix A, 1-1 to The Lord of the Rings, the ruler following Tar-Kalmakil, the 18th, was Ar-Adunachor, the 19th. In the Tale of Years in Appendix B, Ar-Adunachor is said to have taken the scepter in the year 2899. And on this basis, Mr. Robert Foster, in The Complete Guide to Middle-Earth, gives the death date of Tar-Kalmakil as 2899. On the other hand, at a later point in the account of the rulers of Numenor in Appendix A, Ar-Adunachor is called the 20th king. And in 1964, my father replied to a correspondent who had inquired about this. As the genealogy stands, he should be called the 16th king and 19th ruler. 19 should possibly be read for 20, but it is also possible that a name has been left out. He explained that he could not be certain because at the time of writing this letter, his papers on the subject were not available to him. When editing the Akalabeth, I changed the actual reading, and the 20th king took the scepter of his fathers, and he ascended the throne in the name of Adunachor, to, and the 19th king, the Silmarillion, page 267, and similarly, 4 and 20 to 3 and 20. Ibid, page 270. At that time I had not observed that in the line of Elros, the ruler following Tar-Kalmakil was not Ar-Adunachor, but Tar-Ardamin. But it now seems perfectly clear, from the fact alone that Tar-Ardamin's death date is here given as 2899, that he was omitted in error from the list in The Lord of the Rings. On the other hand, it is a certainty of the tradition, stated in Appendix A in the Akalabeth, and in the line of Elros, that Ar-Adunachor was the first king to take the scepter in a name of the Adunaik tongue. On the assumption that Tar-Ardamin dropped out of the list in Appendix A by a mere oversight, it is surprising that the change in the style of the royal names should there be attributed to the first ruler after Tar-Kalmakil. It may be that a more complex textual situation underlies the passage than a mere error of omission. End of note. 20. Ar-Adunachor, Tar-Herenumen. He was born in the year 2709, and he ruled for 63 years until his death in 2962. He was the first king to take the scepter with a title in the Adunaik tongue. Though out of fear, as aforesaid, a name in Quenya was inscribed in the scrolls. But these titles were held by the faithful to be blasphemous, for they signified Lord of the West, by which title they had been wont to name one of the great Valar only, Manwë in especial. In this reign the elven tongues were no longer used, nor permitted to be taught, but were maintained in secret by the faithful. And the ships from Eresea came seldom and secretly to the west shores of Numenor thereafter. 21. Ar-Zimrathon, Tar-Hostamir. He was born in the year 2798, and he ruled for 71 years until his death in 3033. 22. Ar-Sakalthor, Tar-Falasion. He was born in the year 2876, and he ruled for 69 years until his death in 3102. 23. Ar-Gimilzor, Tar-Telemnar. He was born in the year 2960, and he ruled for 75 years until his death in 3177. He was the greatest enemy of the faithful that had yet arisen, and he forbade utterly the use of the Eldarin tongues, and would not permit any of the Eldar to come to the land, and punished those that welcomed them. He revered nothing, and went never to the Hallow of Eru. He was wedded to Inzilbeth, a lady descended from Tar-Kalmakil, but she was secretly of the faithful, for her mother was Lindorie, of the House of the Lords of Andunia, and there was small love between them, and strife between their sons. Note 12. In two genealogical tables, her father is shown as Gamilzagar, the second son, born in 2630, of Tar-Kalmakil, but this is clearly impossible. Inzilbeth must have been descended from Tar-Kalmakil at more removes. End of note. For Inziladun, the elder, was beloved of his mother and of like mind with her, but Gimilchad, the younger, was his father's son, and him Argamelzor would fain have appointed his heir had the laws allowed. Note 13. There is a highly formalized floral design of my father's, similar in style to that shown in pictures by J.R.R. Tolkien, 1979, number 45, bottom right, which bears the title Inziladun, and beneath it is written both in Feanorian script and transliterated, Numelote, Flower of the West. End of note. Gimilchad was born in the year 3044, and he died in 3243. Note 14. According to the Akalabeth, the Silmarillion, page 269, Gimilchad died 2 years before his 200th year, which was accounted an early death for one of Elros' line, even in its waning. End of note. 24. Tar Palantir, Ar Inziladun. He was born in the year 3035, and he ruled for 78 years until his death in 3255. Tar Palantir repented of the ways of the kings before him, and would fain have returned to the friendship of the Eldar and the lords of the West. This name Inziladun took, because he was far-sighted both in eye and in mind, and even those who hated him feared his words as those of a true seer. He also would spend much of his days in Ondunia, since Lindoria, his mother's mother, was of the kin of the lords, being sister indeed of Earendur, the 15th lord and grandfather of Numendil, who was lord of Ondunia in the days of Tar Palantir, his cousin. And Tar Palantir would ascend often to the ancient tower of King Minoster and gaze westward in yearning, hoping to see, maybe, some sail coming from Eresea. But no ship came ever again out of the west because of the insolence of the kings, and because the hearts of the most part of the Numenoreans were still hardened. For Gimilchad followed the ways of Argamelzor, and became leader of the king's party, and resisted the will of Tar Palantir as openly as he dared, and yet more in secret. But for a while the faithful had peace, and the king went ever at due times to the hallow upon the Menal Tarma, and the white tree was again given tendance and honor. For Tar Palantir prophesied, saying that when the tree died, then the line of the kings also would perish. Tar Palantir married late and had no son, and his daughter he named Miriel in the elven tongue. But when the king died, she was taken to wife by Pharazon of Gimilchad, who also was dead, against her will, and against the law of Numenor, since she was the child of his father's brother. And he then seized the scepter into his own hand, taking the title of Ar-Pharazon, Tar-Kalion, and Miriel was named Ar-Zimrafel. Note 15. As noted in Appendix A to The Lord of the Rings, Miriel should have been the fourth ruling queen. A final discrepancy between the line of Elros and the Tale of Years arises in the dates of Tar Palantir. It is said in the Akalabeth, page 269, that when Inziladun acceded to the scepter, he took again a title in the elven tongue, as of old, calling himself Tar Palantir. And in the Tale of Years occurs the entry, 3175, Repentance of Tar Palantir, Civil War in Numenor. It would seem almost certain from these statements that 3175 was the year of his accession, and this is borne out by the fact that in the line of Elros, the death date of his father, Argamelzor, was originally given as 3175, and only later amended to 3177. As with the death date of Tar Atanamir, note 10 above, it is hard to understand why this small change was made in contradiction to the Tale of Years. End of note. 25. Ar-Pharazon, Tar-Kalion, the mightiest and last king of Numenor. He was born in the year 3118 and ruled for 64 years, and died in the downfall in the year 3319, usurping the scepter of Tar Miriel, Ar-Zimrafel. She was born in the year 3117 and died in the downfall. Of the deeds of Ar-Pharazon, of his glory and his folly, more is told in the tale of the downfall of Numenor, which Elendil wrote, and which was preserved in Gondor. Note 16. The statement that Elendil was the author of the Akalabeth is made only here. It is also said elsewhere that the story of Aldarion and Arrendis, one of the few detailed histories preserved from Numenor, owed its preservation to its being of interest to Elendil. End of note. 4. The History of Galadriel and Celeborn, and of Amroth, King of Lorien. Editor. There is no part of the history of Middle-earth more full of problems than the story of Galadriel and Celeborn, and it must be admitted that there are severe inconsistencies embedded in the traditions, or, to look at the matter from another point of view, that the role and importance of Galadriel only emerged slowly, and that her story underwent continual refashionings. Thus, at the outset, it is certain that the earlier conception was that Galadriel went east over the mountains from Beleriand alone, before the end of the First Age, and met Celeborn in his own land of Lorien. This is explicitly stated in unpublished writing, and the same idea underlies Galadriel's words to Frodo in The Fellowship of the Ring, 2:7, where she says of Celeborn that, "He has dwelt in the west since the days of dawn, and I have dwelt with him years uncounted. For ere the fall of Nargothrond or Gondolin I passed over the mountains, and together through ages of the world we have fought the long defeat." In all probability, Celeborn was in this conception a Nondoran elf, that is, one of the Teleri who refused to cross the Misty Mountains on the great journey from Cuivienen. On the other hand, in Appendix B to The Lord of the Rings, appears a later version of the story, for it is stated there that at the beginning of the Second Age, in Lindon, south of the Lune, dwelt for a time Celeborn, kinsman of Thingol. His wife was Galadriel, greatest of elven women. And in the notes to The Road Goes Ever On, 1968, page 60, it is said that Galadriel passed over the mountains of Ered Luin with her husband Celeborn, one of the Sindar, and went to Eregion. In the Silmarillion, there is a mention of the meeting of Galadriel and Celeborn in Doriath, and of his kinship with Thingol, page 115, and of their being among the Eldar who remained in Middle-earth after the end of the First Age, page 254. The reasons and motives given for Galadriel's remaining in Middle-earth are various. The passage just cited from The Road Goes Ever On says explicitly, "After the overthrow of Morgoth, at the end of the First Age, a ban was set upon her return, and she had replied proudly that she had no wish to do so." There is no such explicit statement in The Lord of the Rings, but in a letter written in 1967, my father declared, author, "The exiles were allowed to return, save for a few chief actors in the rebellion, of whom at the time of The Lord of the Rings, only Galadriel remained. At the time of her lament in Lorien, she believed this to be perennial, as long as the earth endured." Hence she concludes her lament with a wish or prayer that Frodo may, as a special grace, be granted a purgatorial, but not penal, sojourn in Eresea, the solitary isle in sight of Amon, though for her, the way is closed. Her prayer was granted, but also her personal ban was lifted in reward for her services against Sauron, and above all, for her rejection of the temptation to take the ring when offered to her. So at the end, we see her taking ship. Editor. This statement, very positive in itself, does not, however, demonstrate that the conception of a ban on Galadriel's return into the West was present when the chapter Farewell to Lorien was composed many years before, and I am inclined to think that it was not. See page 234. In a very late and primarily philological essay, certainly written after the publication of The Road Goes Ever On, the story is distinctively different. Author. Galadriel and her brother Finrod were the children of Finarfin, the second son of Indis. Finarfin was of his mother's kind in mind and body, having the golden hair of the Vanyar, their noble and gentle temper, and their love of the Valar. As well as he could, he kept aloof from the strife of his brothers and their estrangement from the Valar, and he often sought peace among the Teleri, whose language he learned. He wedded Eärwin, the daughter of King Olwë of Alqualondë, and his children were thus the kin of King Elw Thingol of Doriath in Beleriand, for he was the brother of Olwë, and this kinship influenced their decision to join in the exile and proved of great importance later in Beleriand. Finrod was like his father in his fair face and golden hair, and also in noble and generous heart, though he had the high courage of the Noldor, and in his youth their eagerness and unrest. And he had also from his Toleran mother a love of the sea, and dreams of far lands that he had never seen. Galadriel was the greatest of the Noldor, except Feanor, maybe, though she was wiser than he, and her wisdom increased with the long years. Her mother name was Nerwin, Man-Maiden, and she grew to be tall beyond the measure even of the women of the Noldor. She was strong of body, mind, and will, a match for both the lore masters and the athletes of the Eldar in the days of their youth. Note 1. See Appendix E, page 266. End of note. Even among the Eldar, she was accounted beautiful, and her hair was held a marvel unmatched. It was golden like the hair of her father and of her foremother, Indus, but richer and more radiant, for its gold was touched by some memory of the star-like silver of her mother, and the Eldar said that the light of the two trees, Laurelin and Telperion, had been snared in her tresses. Many thought that this saying first gave to Feanor the thought of imprisoning and blending the light of the trees that later took shape in his hands as the Silmarils, for Feanor beheld the hair of Galadriel with wonder and delight. He begged 3 times for a tress, but Galadriel would not give him even one hair. These 2 kinsfolk, the greatest of the Eldar of Valinor, were unfriends forever. Galadriel was born in the bliss of Valinor, but it was not long in the reckoning of the blessed realm before that was dimmed, and thereafter she had no peace within. For in that testing time, amid the strife of the Noldor, she was drawn this way and that. She was proud, strong, and self-willed, as were all the descendants of Finwë, save Finarfin. And like her brother Finrod, of all her kin the nearest to her heart, she had dreams of far lands, and dominions that might be her own to order as she would without tutelage. Yet deeper still there dwelt in her the noble and generous spirit of the Vanyar, and a reverence for the Valar that she could not forget. From her earliest years she had a marvelous gift of insight into the minds of others, but judged them with mercy and understanding, and she withheld her goodwill from none, save only Feanor. In him she perceived a darkness that she hated and feared, though she did not perceive that the shadow of the same evil had fallen upon the minds of all the Noldor, and upon her own. So it came to pass that when the light of Valinor failed, forever as the Noldor thought, she joined the rebellion against the Valar, who commanded them to stay. And once she had set foot upon that road of exile, she would not relent, but rejected the last message of the Valar, and came under the doom of Mondos. Even after the merciless assault upon the Teleri, and the rape of their ships, though she fought fiercely against Feanor in defense of her mother's kin, she did not turn back. Her pride was unwilling to return, a defeated suppliant for pardon, but now she burned with desire to follow Feanor with her anger to whatever lands he might come, and to thwart him in all ways that she could. Pride still moved her, when at the end of the elder days, after the final overthrow of Morgoth, she refused the pardon of the Valar for all who had fought against him, and remained in Middle-earth. It was not until 2 long ages more had passed, when at last all that she had desired in her youth came to her hand, the ring of power and the dominion of Middle-earth, of which she had dreamed, that her wisdom was full-grown, and she rejected it, and passing the last test, departed from Middle-earth forever. Editor. This last sentence relates closely to the scene in Lothlórien when Frodo offered the One Ring to Galadriel. The Fellowship of the Ring, 2:7. And now at last it comes. You will give me the ring freely. In place of the Dark Lord, you will set up a queen. In the Silmarillion, it is told, page 84, that at the time of the rebellion of the Noldor in Valinor, Galadriel, author, was eager to be gone. No oaths she swore, but the words of Feanor concerning Middle-earth had kindled in her heart, for she longed to see the wide, unguarded lands and to rule there a realm at her own will. Editor, there are, however, in the present account, several features of which there is no trace in the Silmarillion. The kinship of Finarfin's children with Thingol as a factor influencing their decision to join in Feanor's rebellion, Galadriel's peculiar dislike and distrust of Feanor from the beginning, and the effect she had on him, and the fighting at Alqualondë among the Noldor themselves, Angrod asserted to Thingol in Menegroth no more than that the kin of Finarfin were guiltless of the slaying of the Teleri. The Silmarillion, page 129. Most notable, however, in the passage just cited, is the explicit statement that Galadriel refused the pardon of the Valar at the end of the First Age. Later, in this essay, it is said that though called Nerwin by her mother, and Artanis, noblewoman, by her father, the name she chose to be her Sindarin name was Galadriel, for it was the most beautiful of her names, and had been given to her by her lover, Teleporno of the Teleri, whom she wedded later in Beleriand. Teleporno is Celeborn, here given a different history, as discussed further below, page 233. On the name itself, see Appendix E, page 266. A wholly different story, adumbrated but never told, of Galadriel's conduct at the time of the rebellion of the Noldor, appears in a very late and partly illegible note. The last writing of my father's on the subject of Galadriel and Celeborn, and probably the last on Middle-earth and Valinor, set down in the last month of his life. In this he emphasized the commanding stature of Galadriel already in Valinor, the equal if unlike in endowments of Feanor. And it is said here that so far from joining in Feanor's revolt, she was in every way opposed to him. She did indeed wish to depart from Valinor and to go into the wide world of Middle-earth for the exercise of her talents. For, being brilliant in mind and swift in action, she had early absorbed all of what she was capable of the teaching which the Valar thought fit to give the Eldar, and she felt confined in the tutelage of Amon. This desire of Galadriel's was, it seems, known to Manwë, and he had not forbidden her, but nor had she been given formal leave to depart. Pondering what she might do, Galadriel's thoughts turned to the ships of the Teleri, and she went for a while to dwell with her mother's kindred in Alqualondë. There she met Celeborn, who is here again a Teleran prince, the grandson of Olwë of Alqualondë, and thus her close kinsman. Together they planned to build a ship and sail in it to Middle-earth, and they were about to seek leave from the Valar for their venture when Melkor fled from Valmar and, returning with Ungoliant, destroyed the light of the trees. In Feanor's revolt that followed the darkening of Valinor, Galadriel had no part. Indeed, she with Celeborn fought heroically in defense of Alqualondë against the assault of the Noldor, and Celeborn's ship was saved from them. Galadriel, despairing now of Valinor, and horrified by the violence and cruelty of Feanor, set sail into the darkness without waiting for Manwë's leave, which would undoubtedly have been withheld in that hour, however legitimate her desire in itself. It was thus that she came under the ban set upon all departure, and Valinor was shut against her return. But together with Celeborn, she reached Middle-earth somewhat sooner than Feanor, and sailed into the haven where Círdan was lord. There they were welcomed with joy as being of the kin of Elwë, Thingol. In the years after, they did not join in the war against Angband, which they judged to be hopeless under the ban of the Valar and without their aid. And their counsel was to withdraw from Beleriand and to build up a power to the eastward, whence they feared that Morgoth would draw reinforcement, befriending and teaching the dark elves and men of those regions. But such a policy having no hope of acceptance among the elves of Beleriand, Galadriel and Celeborn departed over Ered Lindon before the end of the First Age, and when they received the permission of the Valar to return into the West, they rejected it. This story, withdrawing Galadriel from all association with the rebellion of Feanor, even to the extent of giving her a separate departure, with Celeborn, from Amon, is profoundly at variance with all that is said elsewhere. It arose from philosophical, rather than historical, considerations concerning the precise nature of Galadriel's disobedience in Valinor on the one hand, and her status and power in Middle-earth on the other. That it would have entailed a good deal of alteration in the narrative of the Silmarillion is evident, but that my father doubtless intended to do. It may be noted here that Galadriel did not appear in the original story of the rebellion and flight of the Noldor, which existed long before she did. And also, of course, that after her entry into the stories of the First Age, her actions could still be transformed radically, since the Silmarillion had not been published. The book, as published, was, however, formed from completed narratives, and I could not take into account merely projected revisions. On the other hand, the making of Celeborn into a Teleran elf of Aman contradicts not only statements in the Silmarillion, but also those cited already, page 228, from The Road Goes Ever On, and Appendix B to The Lord of the Rings, where Celeborn is a Sindarin elf of Beleriand. As to why this fundamental alteration in his history was to be made, it might be answered that it arose from the new narrative element of Galadriel's departure from Aman separately from the hosts of the rebel Noldor. But Celeborn is already transformed into a Teleran elf in the text, cited on page 231, where Galadriel did take part in Feanor's revolt and march from Valinor, and where there is no indication of how Celeborn came to Middle-earth. The earlier story, apart from the question of the ban and the pardon, to which the statements in the Silmarillion, The Road Goes Ever On, and Appendix B to The Lord of the Rings refer, is fairly clear. Galadriel, coming to Middle-earth as one of the leaders of the second host of the Noldor, met Celeborn in Doriath and was later wedded to him. He was the grandson of Thingol's brother, Elmo, a shadowy figure about whom nothing is told save that he was the younger brother of Elwë, Thingol, and Olwë, and was beloved of Elwë, with whom he remained. Elmo's son was named Galadhon, and his sons were Celeborn and Galathil. Galathil was the father of Nimloth, who wedded Dior Thingol's heir and was the mother of Elwing. By this genealogy, Celeborn was a kinsman of Galadriel, the granddaughter of Olwë of Aqualondë, but not so close as by that in which he became Olwë's grandson. It is a natural assumption that Celeborn and Galadriel were present at the ruin of Doriath. It is said in one place that Celeborn escaped the sack of Doriath, and perhaps aided the escape of Elwing to the havens of Sirion with the Silmaril. But this is nowhere stated. Celeborn is mentioned in Appendix B to The Lord of the Rings as dwelling for a time in Lindon, south of the Lune, but early in the Second Age, they passed over the mountains into Eriador. Note 2. In a note in unpublished material, the elves of Harlindon, or Lindon, south of the Lune, are said to have been largely of Sindarin origin, and the region to have been a fief under the rule of Celeborn. It is natural to associate this with the statement in Appendix B, but the reference may possibly be to a later period, for the movements and dwelling places of Celeborn and Galadriel after the fall of Eregion in 1697 are extremely obscure. End of note. Their subsequent history, in the same phase, so to call it, of my father's writing, is told in the short narrative that follows here. Concerning Galadriel and Celeborn. The text bearing this title is a short and hasty outline, very roughly composed, which is nonetheless almost the sole narrative source for the events in the west of Middle-earth, up to the defeat and expulsion of Sauron from Eriador in the year 1701 of the Second Age. Other than this, there is little beyond the brief and infrequent entries in the Tale of Years, and the much more generalized and selective account in Of the Rings of Power and the Third Age, published in the Silmarillion. It is certain that this present text was composed after the publication of The Lord of the Rings, both from there being a reference to the book, and from the fact that Galadriel is called the daughter of Finarfin and the sister of Finrod Felagund. For these are the later names of those princes, introduced in the revised edition. See page 255, note 20. The text is much amended, and it is not always possible to see what belongs to the time of composition of the manuscript and what is indefinitely later. This is the case with those references to Amroth that make him the son of Galadriel and Celeborn. But whenever these references were inserted, I think it is virtually certain that this was a new construction, later than the writing of The Lord of the Rings. Had he been supposed to be their son when it was written, the fact would surely have been mentioned. It is very notable that not only is there no mention in this text of a ban on Galadriel's return into the West, but it even seems from a passage at the beginning of the account that no such idea was present. While later in the narrative, Galadriel's remaining in Middle-earth after the defeat of Sauron in Eriador is ascribed to her sense that it was her duty not to depart while he was still finally unconquered. This is a chief support of the hesitant view expressed above, page 229, that the story of the ban was later than the writing of The Lord of the Rings. Compare also a passage in the story of the Elisar, given on page 249. What follows here is retold from this text, with some interspersed comments indicated by square brackets. Author: Galadriel was the daughter of Finarfin and sister of Finrod Felagund. She was welcome in Dorioth because her mother, Eärwin, daughter of Olwë, was Tolarin and the niece of Thingol, and because the people of Finarfin had had no part in the kinslaying of Alqualondë, and she became a friend of Melion. In Dorioth she met Celeborn, grandson of Elmo, the brother of Thingol. For love of Celeborn, who would not leave Middle-earth, and probably with some pride of her own, for she had been one of those eager to adventure there, she did not go west at the downfall of Melkor, but crossed Ered Lindon with Celeborn and came into Eriador. When they entered that region, there were many Noldor in their following, together with grey elves and green elves, and for a while they dwelt in the country about Lake Nenwiel, Evendim, north of the Shire. Celeborn and Galadriel came to be regarded as lord and lady of the Eldar in Eriador, including the wandering companies of Nondoran origin who had never passed west over Ered Lindon and come down into Osiriond. See The Silmarillion, page 94. During their sojourn near Nenwiel was born, at some time between the years 350 and 400, their son, Amroth. The time and place of Celebrion's birth, whether here or later in Eregion, or even later in Lorien, is not made definite. But eventually, Galadriel became aware that Sauron again, as in the ancient days of the captivity of Melkor, see The Silmarillion, page 51, had been left behind. Or rather, since Sauron had as yet no single name, and his operations had not been perceived to proceed from a single evil spirit, prime servant of Melkor, she perceived that there was an evil controlling purpose abroad in the world, and that it seemed to proceed from a source further to the east, beyond Eriador and the Misty Mountains. Celeborn and Galadriel therefore went eastwards about the year 700 of the Second Age, and established the primarily, but by no means solely, Noldoran realm of Eregion. It may be that Galadriel chose it because she knew of the dwarves of Khazad Dûm, Moria. There were and always remained some dwarves on the eastern side of Ered Lindon, where the very ancient mansions of Nogrod and Belagost had been, not far from Nenwiel, but they had transferred most of their strength to Khazad Dûm. Note 3. Compare The Fellowship of the Ring, 1-2. The ancient east-west road ran through the Shire to its end at the Grey Havens, and dwarves had always used it on their way to their mines in the Blue Mountains. End of note. Celeborn had no liking for dwarves of any race, as he showed to Gimli in Lothlorien, and never forgave them for their part in the destruction of Dorioth. But it was only the host of Nogrod that took part in that assault, and it was destroyed in the Battle of Sarn Othrod. The Silmarillion, pages 233 to 235. The dwarves of Belagost were filled with dismay at the calamity and fear for its outcome, and this hastened their departure eastwards to Khazad Dûm. Note 4. It is said in Appendix A, 3, to The Lord of the Rings, that the ancient cities of Nogrod and Belagost were ruined in the breaking of Thangorodrim. But in the Tale of Years in Appendix B, circa 40, many dwarves leaving their old cities in Ered Luin go to Moria and swell its numbers. End of note. Thus the dwarves of Moria may be presumed to have been innocent of the ruin of Dorioth and not hostile to the elves. In any case, Galadriel was more far-sighted in this than Celeborn, and she perceived from the beginning that Middle-earth could not be saved from the residue of evil that Morgoth had left behind him, save by a union of all the peoples who were in their way and in their measure opposed to him. She looked upon the dwarves also with the eye of a commander, seeing in them the finest warriors to pit against the orcs. Moreover, Galadriel was a Noldo, and she had a natural sympathy with their minds and their passionate love of crafts of hand, a sympathy much greater than that found among many of the Eldar. The dwarves were the children of Aule, and Galadriel, like others of the Noldor, had been a pupil of Aule and Yavanna in Valinor. Galadriel and Celeborn had in their company a Noldoran craftsman named Celebrimbor. He is here said to have been one of the survivors of Gondolin, who had been among Turgon's greatest artificers. But the text is amended to the later story that made him a descendant of Feanor, as is mentioned in Appendix B to The Lord of the Rings, in the revised edition only, and more fully detailed in The Silmarillion, pages 176 and 276, where he is said to have been the son of Curufin, the fifth son of Feanor, who was estranged from his father and remained in Nargothrond when Celegorm and Curufin were driven forth. Celebrimbor had an almost dwarvish obsession with crafts, and he soon became the chief artificer of Eregion, entering into a close relationship with the dwarves of Khazad Dûm, among whom his greatest friend was Narvi. In the inscription on the west gate of Moria, Gandalf read the words, Im Narvi hein echant, Celebrimbor o Eregion, tethant I thwihin. I, Narvi, made them. Celebrimbor of Holland drew these signs. The Fellowship of the Ring, 2-4. Both elves and dwarves had great profit from this association, so that Eregion became far stronger and Khazad Dûm far more beautiful than either would have done alone. This account of the origin of Eregion agrees with what is told in Of the Rings of Power, The Silmarillion, page 286. But neither there nor in the brief references in Appendix B to The Lord of the Rings is there any mention of the presence of Galadriel and Celeborn. Indeed, in the latter again, in the revised edition only, Celebrimbor is called the Lord of Eregion. The building of the chief city of Eregion, Ost in Edil, was begun in about the year 750 of the Second Age, the date that is given in the Tale of Years for the founding of Eregion by the Noldor. News of these things came to the ears of Sauron and increased the fears that he felt concerning the coming of the Numenoreans to Lindon and the coasts further south, and their friendship with Gil-galad. And he heard tell also of Aldarion, son of Tar-Meneldir, the king of Numenor, now become a great shipbuilder who brought his vessels to haven far down into the Harad. Sauron therefore left Eriador alone for a while, and he chose the land of Mordor, as it was afterwards called, for a stronghold as a counter to the threat of the Numenorean landings. This is dated circa 1000 in the Tale of Years. When he felt himself to be secure, he sent emissaries to Eriador, and finally, in about the year 1200 of the Second Age, came himself, wearing the fairest form that he could contrive. But in the meantime, the power of Galadriel and Celeborn had grown, and Galadriel, assisted in this by her friendship with the dwarves of Moria, had come into contact with the Nondoran realm of Lorinond, on the other side of the Misty Mountains. Note 5. In a note to the text, it is explained that Lorinond was the Nondoran name of this region, afterwards called Lorien and Lothlorien, and contained the Elvish word meaning golden light, valley of gold. The Quenya form would be Laurinonde, the Sindarin, Glornon, or Non Laur. Both here and elsewhere, the meaning of the name is explained by reference to the golden Malorn trees of Lothlorien. But they were brought there by Galadriel. For the story of their origin, see pages 167 and 168. And in another, later discussion, the name Lorinond is said to have been itself a transformation, after the introduction of the Malorns, of a yet older name, Lindorinond, Vale of the Land of the Singers. Since the elves of this land were in origin Teleri, there is here no doubt present the name by which the Teleri called themselves Lindar, the Singers. From many other discussions of the names of Lothlorien, to some extent at variance among themselves, it emerges that all the later names were probably due to Galadriel herself, combining different elements. Laure, gold. Non, nond, valley. Undor, land. Lin, sing. And in Laure Lindorinon, valley of singing gold, which Treebeard told the hobbits was the earlier name, deliberately echoing the name of the golden tree that grew in Valinor, for which, as is plain, Galadriel's longing increased year by year to at last an overwhelming regret. Lorien itself was originally the Quenya name of a region in Valinor, often used as the name of the Vala, Irmo, to whom it belonged. A place of rest and shadowy trees and fountains, a retreat from cares and griefs. The further change from Lorienond, Valley of Gold, to Lorien, may well be due to Galadriel herself, for the resemblance cannot be accidental. She had endeavored to make Lorien a refuge and an island of peace and beauty, a memorial of ancient days, but was now filled with regret and misgiving, knowing that the golden dream was hastening to a gray awakening. It may be noted that Treebeard interpreted Lothlorien as Dreamflower. In Concerning Galadriel and Celeborn, I have retained the name Lorienond throughout, although when it was written, Lorienond was intended as the original and ancient Nondoran name of the region, and the story of the introduction of the Malorns by Galadriel had not yet been devised. End of note. This was peopled by those elves who forsook the great journey of the Eldar from Cuavienen and settled in the woods of the Vale of Anduin, the Silmarillion, page 94, and it extended into the forest on both sides of the great river, including the region where afterwards was Dol Guldur. These elves had no princes or rulers and led their lives free of care, while all Morgoth's power was concentrated in the northwest of Middle-earth. But many Sindar and Noldor came to dwell among them, and their Sindarizing, under the impact of Beleriandic culture, began. Note 6. This is a later emendation. The text, as originally written, stated that Lorienond was ruled by native princes. End of note. It is not made clear when this movement into Lorienond took place. It may be that they came from Eregion by way of Khazad Dûm and under the auspices of Galadriel. Galadriel, striving to counteract the machinations of Sauron, was successful in Lorienond, while in Lindon, Gil-galad shut out Sauron's emissaries and even Sauron himself, as is more fully reported in Of the Rings of Power, The Silmarillion, page 287. But Sauron had better fortune with the Noldor of Eregion, and especially with Celebrimbor, who desired in his heart to rival the skill and fame of Feanor. The cousining of the smiths of Eregion by Sauron, and his giving himself the name Anatar, Lord of Gifts, is told in Of the Rings of Power, but there is there no mention of Galadriel. In Eregion, Sauron posed as an emissary of the Valar, sent by them to Middle-earth, thus anticipating the Istari, or ordered by them to remain there to give aid to the elves. He perceived at once that Galadriel would be his chief adversary and obstacle, and he endeavored therefore to placate her, bearing her scorn with outward patience and courtesy. No explanation is offered in this rapid outline of why Galadriel scorned Sauron, unless she saw through his disguise, or of why, if she did perceive his true nature, she permitted him to remain in Eregion. Note 7. In an isolated and undateable note, it is said that although the name Sauron is used earlier than this in the Tale of Years, his name, implying identity with the great lieutenant of Morgoth in the Silmarillion, was not actually known until about the year 1600 of the Second Age, the time of the forging of the One Ring. The mysterious power of hostility to elves and Edain was perceived soon after the year 500, and among the Numenoreans, first by Aldarion towards the end of the 8th century, about the time when he established the Haven of Vinyalonde, page 176. But it had no known center. Sauron endeavored to keep distinct his two sides, enemy and tempter. When he came among the Noldor, he adopted a specious fair form, a kind of simulated anticipation of the later Istari, and a fair name, Artano, High Smith, or Aulendu, meaning one who is devoted to the service of the Vala Aule. In Of the Rings of Power, page 287, the name that Sauron gave to himself at this time was Anatar, the Lord of Gifts, but that name is not mentioned here. The note goes on to say that Galadriel was not deceived, saying that this Aulendu was not in the train of Aule in Valinor. But this is not decisive, since Aule existed before the building of Arda, and the probability is that Sauron was in fact one of the Aulian Maiar, corrupted before Arda began by Melkor. With this, compare the opening sentences in Of the Rings of Power. Of old, there was Sauron, the Maia. In the beginning of Arda, Melkor seduced him to his allegiance. End of note. Sauron used all his arts upon Celebrimbor and his fellow smiths, who had formed a society or brotherhood very powerful in Eregion, the Gwaith Ymirdain. But he worked in secret, unknown to Galadriel and Celeborn. Before long, Sauron had the Gwaith Ymirdain under his influence, for at first they had great profit from his instruction in secret matters of their craft. Note 8. In a letter written in September 1954, my father said, "At the beginning of the Second Age, he, Sauron, was still beautiful to look at, or could still assume a beautiful, visible shape, and was not indeed wholly evil, not unless all reformers who want to hurry up with reconstruction and reorganization are wholly evil, even before pride and the lust to exert their will eat them up. The particular branch of the High Elves concerned, the Noldor, or Loremasters, were always vulnerable on the side of science and technology, as we should call it. They wanted to have the knowledge that Sauron genuinely had, and those of Eregion refused the warnings of Gil-galad and Elrond. The particular desire of the Eregion elves, an allegory, if you like, of a love of machinery and technical devices, is also symbolized by their special friendship with the dwarves of Moria." End of note. So great became his hold on the Myrdain that at length he persuaded them to revolt against Galadriel and Celeborn and to seize power in Eregion. And that was at some time between 1350 and 1400 of the Second Age. Galadriel thereupon left Eregion and passed through Khazad Dûm to Lorinond, taking with her Amroth and Celebrion. But Celeborn would not enter the mansions of the dwarves, and he remained behind in Eregion, disregarded by Celebrimbor. In Lorinond, Galadriel took up rule and defense against Sauron. Sauron himself departed from Eregion about the year 1500, after the Myrdain had begun the making of the Rings of Power. Now Celebrimbor was not corrupted in heart or faith, but had accepted Sauron as what he posed to be. And when at length he discovered the existence of the One Ring, he revolted against Sauron and went to Lorinond to take counsel once more with Galadriel. They should have destroyed all the Rings of Power at this time, but they failed to find the strength. Galadriel counseled him that the three rings of the elves should be hidden, never used, and dispersed, far from Eregion, where Sauron believed them to be. It was at that time that she received Nenya, the White Ring, from Celebrimbor, and by its power the realm of Lorinond was strengthened and made beautiful. But its power upon her was great also, and unforeseen, for it increased her latent desire for the sea and for return into the west, so that her joy in Middle-earth was diminished. Note 9. Galadriel cannot have made use of the powers of Nenya until a much later time, after the loss of the ruling ring. But it must be admitted that the text does not at all suggest this, although she is said just above to have advised Celebrimbor that the elven rings should never be used. End of note. Celebrimbor followed her counsel that the Ring of Air and the Ring of Fire should be sent out of Eregion, and he entrusted them to Gil-galad in Lindon. It is said here that at this time Gil-galad gave Narya, the Red Ring, to Círdan, Lord of the Havens. But later in the narrative there is a marginal note that he kept it himself until he set out for the War of the Last Alliance. When Sauron learned of the repentance and revolt of Celebrimbor, his disguise fell, and his wrath was revealed. And gathering a great force, he moved over Calenarthon, Rohan, to the invasion of Eriador in the year 1695. When news of this reached Gil-galad, he sent out a force under Elrond, half-elven. But Elrond had far to go, and Sauron turned north and made at once for Eregion. The scouts and vanguard of Sauron's host were already approaching when Celeborn made a sortie and drove them back. But though he was able to join his force to that of Elrond, they could not return to Eregion. for Sauron's host was far greater than theirs, great enough both to hold them off and closely to invest Eregion. At last the attackers broke into Eregion with ruin and devastation and captured the chief object of Sauron's assault, the House of the Myrdain, where were their smithies and their treasures. Celebrimbor, desperate himself, withstood Sauron on the steps of the great door of the Myrdain, but he was grappled and taken captive, and the house was ransacked. There Sauron took the 9 rings and other lesser works of the Myrdain, but the 7 and the 3 he could not find. Then Celebrimbor was put to torment, and Sauron learned from him where the 7 were bestowed. This Celebrimbor revealed, because neither the 7 nor the 9 did he value as he valued the 3. The 7 and the 9 were made with Sauron's aid, whereas the 3 were made by Celebrimbor alone, with a different power and purpose. It is not actually said here that Sauron at this time took possession of the 7 rings, though the implication seems clear that he did so. In Appendix A, 3, to The Lord of the Rings, it is said that there was a belief among the dwarves of Durin's folk that the ring of Durin the Third, king of Khazad-dûm, was given to him by the elven smiths themselves, and not by Sauron. But nothing is said in the present text about the way in which the 7 rings came into the possession of the dwarves. Concerning the 3 rings, Sauron could learn nothing from Celebrimbor, and he had him put to death. But he guessed the truth, that the 3 had been committed to elvish guardians, and that must mean to Galadriel and Gil-galad. In black anger, he turned back to battle, and bearing as a banner Celebrimbor's body hung upon a pole, shot through with orc arrows, he turned upon the forces of Elrond. Elrond had gathered such few of the elves of Eregion as had escaped, but he had no force to withstand the onset. He would indeed have been overwhelmed had not Sauron's host been attacked in the rear. For Durin sent out a force of dwarves from Khazad-dûm, and with them came elves of Lorinond, led by Amroth. Elrond was able to extricate himself, but he was forced away northwards, and it was at that time, in the year 1697, according to the Tale of Years, that he established a refuge and stronghold at Imladris, Rivendell. Sauron withdrew the pursuit of Elrond and turned upon the dwarves and the elves of Lorinond, whom he drove back. But the gates of Moria were shut, and he could not enter. Ever afterwards, Moria had Sauron's hate, and all orcs were commanded to harry dwarves whenever they might. But now Sauron attempted to gain the mastery of Eriador. Lorinond could wait. But as he ravaged the lands, slaying or drawing off all the small groups of men and hunting the remaining elves, many fled to swell Elrond's host to the northward. Now Sauron's immediate purpose was to take Lindon, where he believed that he had most chance of seizing one, or more, of the 3 rings. And he called in therefore his scattered forces and marched west towards the land of Gil-galad, ravaging as he went. But his force was weakened by the necessity of leaving a strong detachment to contain Elrond and prevent him coming down upon his rear. Now for long years the Numenoreans had brought in their ships to the Grey Havens, and there they were welcome. As soon as Gil-galad began to fear that Sauron would come with open war into Eriador, he sent messages to Numenor. And on the shores of Lindon, the Numenoreans began to build up a force and supplies for war. In 1695, when Sauron invaded Eriador, Gil-galad called on Numenor for aid. Then Tar-Minaster, the king, sent out a great navy, but it was delayed and did not reach the coasts of Middle-earth until the year 1700. By that time, Sauron had mastered all Eriador, save only besieged Imladris, and had reached the line of the River Lune. He had summoned more forces which were approaching from the southeast, and were indeed in Enedwaith at the crossing of Tharbad, which was only lightly held. Gil-galad and the Numenoreans were holding the Lune in desperate defense of the Grey Havens, when, in the very nick of time, the great armament of Tar-Minaster came in, and Sauron's host was heavily defeated and driven back. The Numenorean admiral, Kiriatur, sent part of his ships to make a landing further to the south. Sauron was driven away southeast after great slaughter at Sarn Ford, the crossing of the Barandwin, and though strengthened by his force at Tharbad, he suddenly found a host of the Numenoreans again in his rear, for Kiryatur had put a strong force ashore at the mouth of the Gwathlaw, Greyflood, where there was a small Numenorean harbor. This was Vinyalonde of Taraldarion, afterwards called Lond Dyer. See Appendix D, page 261. In the Battle of the Gwathlaw, Sauron was routed utterly, and he himself only narrowly escaped. His small remaining force was assailed in the east of Cullenarthon, and he, with no more than a bodyguard, fled to the region afterwards called Dagorlad, Battle Plain, whence broken and humiliated, he returned to Mordor and vowed vengeance upon Numenor. The army that was besieging Imladris was caught between Elrond and Gil-galad and utterly destroyed. Eriador was cleared of the enemy, but lay largely in ruins. At this time, the First Council was held, and it was there determined that an elvish stronghold in the east of Eriador should be maintained at Imladris rather than in Eregion. Note 10. The text was amended to read the First White Council. In the Tale of Years, the formation of the White Council is given under the year 2463 of the Third Age. But it may be that the name of the Council of the Third Age deliberately echoed that of this council, held long before, the more especially as several of the chief members of the one had been members of the other. End of note.